Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. It is hour number two, Good, the Bad, the Dumb, coming up this hour, and we'll continue to look at the NBA Finals last night, which wrapped up with Milwaukee winning for the first time in 50 years. A city that is dealing with two major things going on within. I mean, Green Bay is up the road, of course, but the Packers and the Aaron Rodgers situation is now the next thing that's on the plate. Let them enjoy this finals, though, for a while before whatever happens with Aaron Rodgers happens with Aaron Rodgers. But I think there was a point that was made on Twitter last night, and I think it was kind of interesting. If you're Aaron Rodgers and you have a little bit of ownership in the Bucks and you've been paying attention and going to games and whatnot, don't you feel like, all right, maybe I want to stick around with this area, right? Maybe I want to win a title with this area. Is there something that just sort of hits you? Is there some sort of feeling of, all right, look at what's happening here. Look at the momentum. Look at the wave. Look at the euphoria. We were so close last year. We are going to be close again. If I just stick around, we're going to be one of the favorites to win it all. I could go to a new team and I'd have new team-ism stuff, like learning new players and new systems and whatnot. But if I just go and mend the fences, what I'm seeing with all of these people and the energy of this city and all of that, I'm going to be able to get in Green Bay and down in Milwaukee and all of Wisconsin. So, again, for the citizens of that area, for the Packer fans who were celebrating last night, you got some time to deal with what goes on with Green Bay and their situation with the quarterback. Enjoy this. So many people last night never saw that. It's not that it's rare in sports, because we've seen it a couple of times, but it is pretty great when people can say this has never happened, or it hasn't happened in 50 years, or it hasn't happened in two generations. Or whatever it is. You know, it's just something that's pretty special. And last night, you talk about 50 years, all the way back to, again, Oscar Robertson and Lou Alcindor and the Milwaukee Bucks a couple of years into existence winning a championship. And that long drought came to an end and did it with a megastar in Giannis. Good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we'll talk SEC football with our good friend Connor Ogarza down at SEC Media Days as the season is going to be fast approaching. And a lot of issues in college football. We'll talk about that as we continue.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Wednesday. And you know what? Last night was good for the people of Milwaukee. Good for Giannis. But what is the real good of the day?
The real good of the day, and it's something that we're kind of tracking. It's new since July 1st.
Right.
But NIL seems to be full steam ahead.
Oh, it certainly is.
Nick Saban was speaking to the Texas High School Coaches Association. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago before he takes to SEC Media Days, where he'll probably answer these questions as well. But he revealed that his young quarterback, Bryce Young, has already made close to seven figures, and he hasn't even really played yet.
Yeah, exactly. Hasn't really played and is already, because he's, you know, going to be the Alabama starting quarterback, people are jumping on that quick.
Yeah.
And that's the thing people don't understand. I saw this on Facebook yesterday. A friend of mine does an online show in Ocala, and he posted this on Facebook, and people are like, how could he get this money? He hasn't even played. I don't think you understand how you know, capitalism works here.
Yeah.
If I'm a car dealership, I got to beat out the other car dealerships for this kid. What am I going to do? Wait till he wins a national championship?
And then go after him?
What am I going to wait till he wins his first three games? I have to get him now. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I have to get him now if he's the Alabama quarterback. That's how it works.
And for Nick Saban, you know he's going to be bragging about things like this.
Of course.
I mean, that big recruiting tool is like, yeah, this kid right here, he's only attempted a pass 22 times in his college career. And he's probably going to, before first game, he'll probably close in on $1 million.
I know. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. You know what's, you know, it's so weird. These guys on campus, you know, they're like, they can date girls, but they can't take them out to dinner. Now they can take them on a yacht.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Take them on a private jet to Paris for dinner.
I mean, we've talked about this, but knowing now, okay, Bryce Young is closing in on $1 million on 22 pass attempts. What would Trevor Lawrence make, or Tim Tebow back in the day?
What would Tim Tebow would have made?
He wouldn't have had to
$20 million.
He wouldn't have had to been in the NFL, right?
Right.
He could have just said, "I'm good, guys. College was it for me."
And it's going to go up and up and
yes,
up.
Yes, it is.
Up and up and up. I mean, if you're Arch Manning right now, and I know money, you come from a rich family, but it's not your money, right?
Yeah.
Still your dad's money and your uncle's money, but now you can make your money. Your money.
Probably can start signing things now.
Right? Real, real currency. These guys can buy huge houses in the college town that they live in. Like, who knows what their lives are going to be like? When I remember the quarterback at South Carolina, Todd Ellis, I was told this story. He's now the voice of the Gamecocks. But I was told this story when I was there, that he drove, at the time that I went to school, he drove a, like, $40,000 car, which was, you know, a luxury car. And people were like, "Oh, Todd Ellis, you see the car Todd Ellis drives? Look at Todd. He must have gotten that." And the story went that he told everybody, he's like, "No, my parents are, you know, they're well off, upper middle class. They didn't have to pay for college.
Yeah.
So I got this. This is they gave me this. They didn't have to pay a penny for my education, and they gave me this car. And that was believable. But at the same time, you're like, eh." Now it doesn't matter.
Now it doesn't matter.
It does not matter how a kid gets an $80,000 BMW. Could have got it from his parents. Could have got it from the dealership. Could have just said, "Here's some keys." It doesn't matter. None of those old conversations that we used to have, we can't do them anymore.
I can totally see car dealerships saying, "Hey, I'm not going to pay you in cash," but doing the whole Mr. Miyagi thing, going, "Choose."
Yeah, choose. Right.
Choose.
Pick one.
Which one you want. Then all you need to do... Mention
come
our
down
name
here every
a couple
Saturday,
times.
Come here Saturday to sign autographs and have people come. Oh, yep. My God. Think about this. Think about what you would pay. Think about you're in Gainesville and how much your business, if you said Tim Tebow will be here from 1 to 4.
Yeah.
Like from 1 to 4, line up, baby. And you pay him. How much would you pay for that?
I've seen it here firsthand. I remember being at a car dealership here on doing a road show for the local side. And Jose Altuve was coming in.
Oh.
And just the amount of people. And it was early in the morning. It was like, you know, like pre-dawn hours before the business really opens. But they opened up an hour early because Jose Altuve was coming in. And the place was packed.
Yep.
And you're talking about this. I mean, I know, he's a good baseball player, one of the, you know, best probably in Astros history, but it's not, you know, it's not college town football.
Right.
Which is a huge difference between, you know, any professional MLB team. I would say
Tim Tebow, when he was at Florida, was one of the top athletes in the country. College football player, top athletes in the country. When he was doing that, you would pay whatever it took to get him to be at your place for 3 hours signing autographs on a Tuesday.
Yep.
I mean, if you could do it, you'd absolutely do it.
And then run like a Tebow discount. I don't
right.
know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. All right. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. Hear me out, because Jeff Bezos went into space.
Yes.
So that's not really that bad. You know, you got $1 billion. You want to spend it your way. Fine. But he went into space in a phallic-shaped rocket.
Yeah, totally.
And the internet did not miss a beat, and all the Austin Power jokes came out.
Of course. I saw it on one of the news channels last night that they showed. Here's footage of the launch, and then they showed the clip from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're in R&D, you know, and you're designing this thing, doesn't that cross your mind? Have none of these guys ever see Austin Powers and all the jokes that they made?
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, you want to make sure it's like going to be workable, right? I mean, if it's the form that works best, it looks like a thing. But you know,
yeah,
so that's
no, I
how
get,
you get
that.
Into space. Now, would you go to space if you could?
Nah. If you asked like 7-8-year-old me, yes.
Yeah.
I would totally do it. But now I'm older. I'm like, not really.
I don't think I could handle the G forces at my age. Like when that rocket goes off and you just get sucked back into that seat and you're flying through the air and you, I mean, and it pulls you into that seat. I don't think I could handle the G-forces.
Here's what I think. My issue would be this is I don't think I would enjoy myself. I think I would, you know, the ride up and, you know, that would be it. And then when you're in space, sure, you're, you know, oh, look at me, I'm floating. But I think the entire time my personality is like, okay, anything can go wrong. Let me just get back down to the ground and let me reflect
right.
on what just happened.
Right.
And then be like, oh, that was amazing.
But no, I'm with you on that. I think like skydiving, like I have buddies who've gone skydiving. And I think my first time skydiving, I wouldn't enjoy it at all. Like,
yeah.
Getting the parachute. Getting in the plane, taking off, I'd be a wreck, and then I'd be up in the air, a wreck. They open the door, a wreck. Lean me to the edge, a wreck. Push me out, a wreck. Falling, a wreck. Shoot opened, a wreck. Land on the ground, this is awesome.
This is amazing. I love every minute of it.
But the entire process, yeah. I would be a disaster, and I wouldn't enjoy it. Then I'd be like, maybe I'll do it again, because I really didn't have a good time.
Exactly.
So if you want to send me to space, Jeff Bezos, if you want to pay for my way to space, plan on two trips.
Yeah.
One to just get me over it, and then the second one for me to go, this
round
is
trip.
Great!
Because I'm looking at that rocket yesterday, and the one thing I thought was like, man, I've never seen windows that big on a rocket ship.
No, is yeah.
Are those seals going to hold?
Right.
Of course they're going to hold, but I mean, at the same time, I would be up there going, you know what? I'm just going to get sucked out.
Yeah, I know.
Or I'm just going to get stuck in space and just be there forever. They're going to have to send up another rocket to get me because I'm just floating around.
That would be me. Well, good. Yeah, you're right. By the way, when you said, I never saw an issue where Republicans didn't like it. Republicans did like it. Democrats didn't like it. Democrats did like it. Like it was all over the map.
Yeah.
From the different political pundits, either saying he can do whatever he wants, or this was a waste of money and he owes his workers. Like everybody on the political spectrum had all these opinions.
One of the jokes I saw was he went up there for 4 or 5 minutes, and somebody's like, "All right, Amazon employees, unionize."
Yeah, right. While he's busy.
Away.
Yeah, go ahead and unionize. That's a good point. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. I'm sticking with my theme this week: Olympics.
I love it.
Poland, and I don't know what the issue is with Poland. You know, we always make Polish jokes.
Right.
And I theorize that it stems from 1939 when the Nazis were storming Poland and Poland countered that tank attack on horseback.
Oh, yeah.
That maybe that's where the jokes began. But Poland's always got the brunt of it. And
nice little history lesson.
Yeah.
There, Ron Culver.
And but Poland also does it to themselves sometimes. So they have the Olympic swimming team and they sent 23 swimmers to the Olympics. Doesn't seem like a lot. I mean, hell, the U.S. is sending like 80.
Yeah.
But the Olympics were very clear to Poland that, hey, you can only send 17. So they had to send 6 home before the Olympics even started.
So 6 people thought they were going to be part of the Olympics, and then 6 people were told, yeah, about that. Bye.
6 dreams were destroyed in a matter of a day.
That stinks.
And to double down on it, the Polish Olympic president or whoever it is, you know, did apologize for miscounting. And he says, you know, but these, you know, something about it, them being attacked is rightful and just.
Oh,
you know, like, no, you guys weren't attacked. You guys were just, you didn't read the rules. You
My
thought
goodness.
You could squeeze in 6 more swimmers when you can't.
Golly.
In a country that, you know, is not allowing anybody to go.
Amazing. All right, that's the good, the bad, the dumb. Connor O'Gar is going to join us. We'll talk about college football with him, SEC football with him, as SEC Media Day is continuing. Don't want to miss that as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this wake-up call. Superstart batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts are designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a Superstart battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and their professional parts people can help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, and Michael chimes in. The thing I don't understand about the vaccine, what's the benefits? They're still testing athletes who get the vaccine. You can still test positive with the vaccine. They'll suspend you from the team if positive. Why bother getting it if you don't want? Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Michael, in a way. I like I said earlier, and I said this about the NC State baseball situation too. I do not think if you're an athlete, I think this is a decision. This is a personal decision. I don't like the political pressure. And I certainly do not like the idea of the government forcing citizens to get a vaccine. You get a vaccine, you get a vaccine. If you have it and you got the vaccine, then you're fine. If you don't, you want to take a risk, fine. You will take the risk with other people who are taking the risk. I'm fine with that. And I think, though, that I do like a little bit of the hard stand, though, by Greg Sankey saying, we're not going to change everything because your team is at 40%. And you guys get COVID and you can't play. I agree with that. I'm with you on the athletes and their own personal decision. That's true. It's unfortunate that that stand kind of forces athletes in a way to get the vaccine, right? Because the athletes do not want to be responsible for the Egg Bowl getting canceled or something. You know what I mean? Like a big game, the Iron Bowl or whatever, getting canceled.
Or missing out. I mean, right. If Georgia, you know, I'm going to assume Georgia has a top 10 team this year. If they, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, you know, vaccination rates are low, a couple kids on the team get COVID, and they have to forfeit a game or two, that takes them out of the running.
Right, sure does.
They're done. I mean, the season's over. I mean, it's almost to the point, like, why bother playing?
And again, I mean, listen, it's also... He's saying it in a region of the country that is got a lot of states with a lot of low vaccination percentages. So he's fighting that, and he's fighting the idea of, I can't reshape my college football season for this.
Yeah.
We're not going to.
And I don't think that's political at all. It's just, it's like, hey, guys, we have a finite amount of time that we can squeeze all these games in.
Yeah. What he is suggesting, and we'll talk to Connor O'Gara about it a little bit because I do want to get some clarification. He's actually saying, you'll forfeit that game, meaning you'll lose.
Yeah.
Not you won't play and it'll just be a blank on your schedule. You'll forfeit. The other team will get the victory. That's a really strong statement. It's one thing. Look, go back to the NC State College World Series thing. I do think that that coach at NC State should have told his players, you don't want to get the vaccine, that's fine. But this is what is going to happen to us if we get this and it occurs within our team. Everybody needs to understand that. And if you're still willing to go to Omaha, fine. But that's the case. I don't want an authoritative pressure on a vaccine. Vaccines are, I mean, I just think it's personal, right? I got the vaccine. I will not tell other people they have to get it, but I will tell, if I'm a coach, what it will cost us if we have an outbreak. I think it's the responsible thing to do. And see, the people in Omaha were criticizing the coach because he should have forced his players to get it. And I don't think Nick Saban or, you know, Kirby Smart or Shane Beamer or anybody should be forcing their players to get a vaccine. I think it's extremely personal. But if the Gamecocks have got an outbreak, bye-bye game against Florida or Tennessee or whatever's on the schedule. That's just the way it goes. But Sankey tying a loss to that? He is making a statement. He's basically telling these coaches, I can't force your players, but I'm kind of forcing your players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the way I look at it, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's a private business, you know, and they can kind of set their rules of the game. And maybe he's going to start a trend with all the other commissioners in the league saying this is how it's got to go. Because, I mean, I just go back to, you know, the fact of, like, last year, 2020 is an unusual year. You can make certain allowances. You could kind of move stuff around, shift things around. But logistically, it was a nightmare. I remember the NFL. We love the fact that we had a Tuesday game, like a Wednesday day game. It's like, this is bizarre but awesome at the same time. But that creates such headaches.
Yeah,
that
it would have been...
That could be easily avoided.
And it would have been different if the NFL had said, look, if you can't play Sunday, you're done.
You can't play.
That's an L for you.
Yeah.
That's an L for you and the other team gets the win.
Like the Ravens got so many mulligans. It was ridiculous.
It was. I mean, I know Steeler fans were saying that. Like the Steelers fans were saying when the game got pushed and pushed, Steeler on the message boards and all that were saying, oh, they should forfeit. And I kept telling them, no, they're not going to forfeit. The NFL's not forfeiting a game. Guys, they're going to play. There's television money. There's sponsorship money. They're going to play the game, and that's how business works. You don't make any money if your whole schedule is a bunch of forfeited wins and losses. It's not why they're doing it. They're not doing it. I think people have a misconception. The league doesn't exist so they can claim a champion. It exists to make money, and the only way you make money is if you play games.
Yeah, and by the way, both teams make money off of that game.
Right, exactly.
Sure, the home team might make more money because it's in their stadium and they get more a higher percentage of that revenue, but both teams are making money playing every single game. Doesn't matter if they're home or away.
Something you brought up, I'm going to be interested in this. I don't know the answer. You brought up the fact that it's a private business. The school is, a lot of schools are public universities.
Right.
So can the SEC mandate a vaccination policy? Like if your company says you can't come back to the office unless you're vaccinated, that's a business.
It's a business decision.
Not a government. But I always love the maps of the United States where they say, here's the highest paid public employee, and it's like Nick Saban.
Right.
Right? Like in Alabama, like the highest paid person, government employee is Nick Saban. Like, because he works for a public university. The SEC, though, you're right, that's different. But, and like, Vanderbilt's a private school. Clark Lee could probably say, you want to play on this football team? You got to get a vaccine. Can Nick Saban as a public figure do that? Or is that government authority?
I feel that Nick Saban already has all his players vaccinated. For whatever reason, you know.
All right, bad example. Shane Beamer is at a public university. Can he say, because he's essentially a government agent.
Yeah, true.
I mean, it's a weird way of saying it, but if you're a lawyer, you would say he works for the state of South Carolina. He's a football coach. He's not the governor. He's not a city councilman. He's a football coach, but he is an employee of the state. He cannot dictate to my client, athlete A, that didn't want to get the vaccine, that he has to get the vaccine. It's mandated that he gets the vaccine.
I don't think he can. I mean, because
private school, you can. Private school, that would be like he works for the school. Saying, that's a business. Guess, that's what he does.
Like the way I'm looking at it is like a private business because it's, you know, it's their own entity. You know, right? They're football. I get what you're saying, but because obviously he can't. Greg Sankey couldn't come out and go, hey, everyone has to get the vaccine. But he's laying down the ground rules and the groundwork. So I mean, yeah, now you know, like you said, it doesn't go down to Beamer and go, you know, what are you going to do about it?
All right, if
Lane
I worked
Kiffin,
for
what are you going to do about it?
This is really fascinating to me because I really want to know the answer now. If I worked for the SEC in their home office. Greg Sankey could say, you have to have the vaccine if you come in to do PR or whatever it is you do here. But he cannot dictate a student athlete at a public university. He can't do that, even if it's under the umbrella of the SEC.
And he can't even get away with saying, hey, if you don't get it, you're not going to play. You're not going to get kicked off the team because that'll leak.
Look at us trying to dissect the legalisms of all of this. This was a big deal. I mean, this was a big story.
I'm curious because Big 12 had their media days. Nothing.
I don't think I heard anybody in Big 12 say you will forfeit the game if you don't come in with all of your vaccines in a row.
And it does beg the question: all right, is this going to be the trend moving forward? As you know, Big 10 has their media day, or you know, all the ACC when these start to happen, are these commissioners going to come out and say, yeah, we're going to follow Greg Sankey?
Really quick, you know how the SEC can get with its football team. Some of these really, like if you have a potential 1-2 matchup, in the SEC. Are they gonna forfeit that game?
Well, he has to now,
right? He has to. He threw it down.
Yeah,
he can't come back and say, "Oh, I'm sorry." Blah 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 versus blah blah. I didn't mean this game. This is a big. This is for the number one ranking in the country. Yeah, you're right. No, he's not gonna do that. Connor O'Gara next from Hoover, Alabama. But the SEC is dissecting all of this coming up. We continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Connor O'Gara joins us Saturday down south. Talking SEC football. SEC Media Day is going on right now. Alabama speaking today. Always a big deal in the state. How are you, Connor?
Gentlemen, it's going well. It's crazy. We're halfway done here in Hoover, but yeah, getting to hear Saban talk today after the comment that he had yesterday about Bryce Young. I think a lot of people are looking forward to talking some NIL with Saban.
Absolutely. It's been a while since I attended SEC Media Days, but I do remember the raucous nature of it. Obviously, with COVID, it's kind of been throttled down a little bit. But what is the atmosphere like today and has been all week with fans, et cetera? How much access can they get to this event?
So fans basically don't have any access. There's no fans in the lobby. There's no ring guy hanging out in the lobby or anything like that. It is different in that regard, and I've never seen it quite like this. But there's still a good amount of media here. Radio Row is still crazy. The entire time is just a blur. But you know, I'll say this is a little bit of a nerdy journalism type thing, but it is a little bit disappointing, and I understand the circumstances to only have two players here and to not have them on those little side tables where you get all the good stuff. Instead, they're just on main podiums. So, you know, kind of bright lights are on them, but it's still been a good couple days so far nonetheless.
Let's talk about what Greg Sankey said about COVID and the vaccines, and if a team ends up with an outbreak, it could result in a forfeit. How did that go over? What is the ramifications of this? What are the vaccinations? I don't know if you know, but what are the vaccination numbers with some of the bigger teams in the conference?
So 6 of 14 so far, we've been told, have reached that 80% threshold, which you've heard teams like LSU who are reportedly there. You've heard teams like Florida, who are reportedly not there. And, you know, there've been a lot of different discussions as to, you know, Georgia is a team that's already there. And Kirby Smart, you know, made mention of that. And Kirby Smart actually was very transparent about a lot of those issues, kind of atypical for him in these settings. But 6 of 14 teams in the SEC right now, and Greg Sankey was pretty clear. He said, look, if this doesn't get figured out and these numbers don't improve, we're going to have some flashbacks to 2020. And that is the last thing anyone wants. And you can say that maybe that's a little bit of a scare tactic, but at the same time, if there's been a voice of reason when it comes to all things COVID and handling it in college football, it's been Greg Sankey. And I think that at this point, we should take his word as gospel and understand that there's still a finish line to cross. The NC State baseball situation was brought up by him. It was brought up by Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby. And I think that right now, we're just trying to get to the finish line, though some people are under the impression that we're already here.
I don't think any coach would ever come out against name, image, and likeness based on recruiting, and you kind of want to embrace what's coming. But how has that issue been addressed by the coaches who have had to talk about it already?
You know, I had some time to be able to talk with Mark Stoops afterwards yesterday, after all of his, you know, typical availability. And basically just asked him, you know, how are you going to handle this during the season? I threw out the situation. I said, you know, what if Chris Rodriguez has a 200-yard game and he's got 1,000 cameos waiting for him on Saturday? How is he going to handle all that stuff? And he said, to be honest, like, I don't know how we're going to go about all of these things. And there are some things that we still need to get figured out. But the consensus, and from players and coaches, and I've been really impressed by this, has been, we're still here to play football. You know, Jordan Davis came out and said, I'm a little bit confused by name, image, and likeness. And I'm not fully aware of all the things that are good and bad about it. And I've been kind of keeping my distance. And Matt Corral has said he's been very measured with his approach. I've been impressed. And maybe that's just because we're talking about the representatives here for each team, but they've come across very educated on these issues. And it hasn't necessarily been just about, hey, let's get whatever deal possible. Kirby Smart said he got that text from Quavo, who said, don't be thirsty. Tell your players, don't be thirsty when it comes to name, image, and likeness. So, yeah, I think we're seeing, you know, everybody's been seemingly for it, but I think there's been a little bit of hesitation as to how to go about all these things.
There are four new coaches in the conference this year at Auburn, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee. Each one is a little different. Each one has got a little bit of a unique angle to why they got the job and what they're going up against. Connor, for your thought, which one is the most interesting, potentially interesting story for the 2021 season?
You know, just specifically for 2021, I would probably that's a tough question. I'd probably say it's Heupel at Tennessee because Vols fans obviously are a passionate bunch and they've been deprived of quality offensive play in recent memory. And I think they are so desperate to see that. And Josh Heupel, if you saw him yesterday in his press conference, I think he said the word offense at least 10 times, probably said the word passing another 20 times. There is a clear message coming out of Knoxville, and it's a message that they want to send to the rest of the college football world. It is fun to play offense here. And that's what you saw from Velus Jones, the former USC transfer, who talks about feeling like a kid in a candy store playing in this offense. So what's Tennessee going to be in year one? Are they going to have enough firepower to actually be able to run that style of offense? Is it going to feel reminiscent of like a 2017, 2018 Ole Miss? I don't know, because I think defensively they're going to be a work in progress. But I think that they're going to have a lot of offensive firepower. And can Josh Heupel, you know, get that 7-5 season and show the Arch Mannings and Ty Simpsons of the world that they're legit?
It's got to be frustrating. I mean, when you look at the conference and you see, hey, South Carolina was able to land Steve Spurrier, get some success. Obviously, Florida, Urban Meyer. And then, you know, later on, here's Dan Mullen. You know, you got, Ed Orgeron winning a national championship at LSU. They have not been able to land a decent coach to propel them upwards at Tennessee for over a decade.
Yeah, and you know what? Some would say that Butch Jones was given a little bit too quick of the axe there.
Probably right.
I still think, you know, and I think he just didn't do himself any favors, and that's the biggest issue. And, you know, I think that you look at the way that these coach breakdowns have happened at Tennessee, and, you know, it just always ends so horribly and in such catastrophic fashion. And Josh Heupel kind of doesn't really seem like that sort of dude. I mean, who knows? I mean, time will tell what this is all going to look like. But I actually think from a culture standpoint, he's kind of a good guy to be able to ride the ebbs and flows of it. I mean, this is a guy who played quarterback at Oklahoma and obviously had a ton of success there. But he's been in those high-profile situations before, despite the fact that he's coming from, you know, UCF. And I think personality-wise, you kind of need a guy that's going to be a little bit, you know, muted and not necessarily the guy who's going to go out and try and, you know, be worried about what people are saying about him in the same way that Butch Jones was. And that's where he wasn't necessarily that fit. But Josh Heupel's done nothing but crank out top eight offenses each of the last 3 years. So, yeah, he's got a very big task ahead, no doubt about it.
All right, let's stay in the West here. Let's with Alabama number one and coming off a national championship, who are the teams that you're looking at that are just behind Alabama? Where do you see that division?
You know, Texas A&M is fascinating this year because everybody's got October 9th circled on their calendars, and if they don't, they probably should, because that's the opportunity for Jimbo Fisher that I think we've been waiting on. I think from a roster standpoint, with the experience they have in the secondary now and all the different options at the skill player positions for the Aggies, they finally match up well with Alabama. And I don't know if, like what Roman Harper said, that they're going to be favored, but I think that you look at what A&M has been able to do down the stretch last year specifically, and I guess you could go back to Jimbo Fisher's first year as well, and you could say, hey, this is a team that has been able to figure some things out, and they've done a really good job of making adjustments. Can A&M push Alabama to the brink? I don't think it's impossible at all. I think Alabama gets tripped up in the first half of the schedule for the first time in 6 years, whether that happens against A&M or that road trip to Florida, that I'm still kind of deciding on and working through. But A&M's got a fun team, and I think they're worthy of a lot of preseason buzz, despite the fact that they obviously have the big question of quarterback with Haynes King.
Staying in the West, Ole Miss, Matt Corral, who I'm like, wow, still it feels like he's been there forever, but they look like a team that will put 40, 45 up a game. What will their defense give up, though?
Oh, gosh. Their defense let up over 40 points in, I believe, six games that it played,
yeah,
which just can't happen. Nope. And the question for the Ole Miss defense is, can you flirt with mediocrity? Just flirt with it. Just pretend that at moments throughout the season that, hey, you can go out and maybe not necessarily win a game, but you can go out and not lose it. And that's, I think, the tough spot for Matt Corral and why he felt some of that pressure last year. And he's been pretty open in talking about his bad game, the Arkansas game, and, of course, the game against LSU with five interceptions, and saying, I struggled with drop eight coverage. I really did. And I put a lot of time in this offseason to be able to figure out the right ways to work through that. And I think that if you want to build your team around a quarterback, you want a quarterback like Matt Corral. You want a guy that can move. You want a guy that can escape pressure. He can make those off-script plays when it breaks down. You want somebody that believes, even when he's thrown five interceptions, that he's going to throw a touchdown pass in the very next throw. And that's the kind of juice that I think Matt Corral has. So I think that Ole Miss, you know, is been a little bit disappointing because of that defense, but I think that they're still in position to be able to take a nice step up this year in year two of the Lane Kiffin era.
Obviously, with college football, it's always next man up whenever you lose players to either transfer or going on to the next level. Florida lost two big guys in Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts. Who's coming up, and can the Gators have the same level of success?
A lot of questions about Jacob Copeland, Justin Shorter, the former Penn State transfer who showed in flashes he can be that guy, but you know, still a little bit skeptical about how the former five-star recruit is going to be able to fit in that offense long-term. If he can be that Trayvon Grimes type of piece, that's another guy that they lost this offseason as well, Kadarius Toney. The offensive firepower is going to be different in Florida. We need to, you know, adjust our expectations accordingly. At the same time, though, we've seen with Dan Mullen, when he's had time to develop a quarterback, it's worked out really well. I mean, Nick Fitzgerald, even Felipe Franks, who he wasn't even, yep, you know, in his system as long as he was. Like, look what he did with Felipe Franks in that first year. I just think it's remarkable the job that Dan Mullen has done as an offensive mind, and that's why the floor should be really high for Emory Jones. And a lot of people that are skeptical are probably looking a little bit too far into the Cotton Bowl, or maybe they're breaking down numbers. I want to see what the kid can do when he gets to start and play a full game, and he's not just coming in for a random series or coming in for garbage time. I'm optimistic about Florida's offense being better than advertised, but I think their defense is really where we're going to see more improvement. They just can't be as bad as they were last year. I thought they were a train wreck. I asked Dan Mullen about that yesterday, or 2 days ago, rather. You know, what was the biggest reason your defense never figured it out? And he said, oh, you know, we were erratic at sometimes. I don't know that we say that we never figured it out. Let's call it what it is. They never figured it out. They were terrible. This is a team that had top 30 defenses in 11 of the previous 12 years, and they didn't have that last year, and they weren't anywhere close. So they need to improve in that area. They should with Zachary Carter, Brenton Cox coming back.
Got to get you back next month for a more complete look at the conference before kickoff, my man. Always good stuff. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
You got it. Connor Agard, Saturday Down South at SEC Media Days. Oh, goodness gracious, it's coming right around the corner. On a Progressive guest line, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call as we continue along on Sports Map Radio. This hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage to fit your life, Rocket can. So once again, congratulations, Milwaukee Bucks. Don't we know a couple of people on the network from Milwaukee? Matt Pauly does some stuff. He's from Milwaukee. Bill Schmidt, is he from Milwaukee?
Bill Schmidt took last night off.
So he could party with the Bucks?
I think so.
Congratulations to them.
He might have been in the crowd of 65,000. I don't know.
Do you like getting congratulations when your team wins? You didn't do anything. So I'm offering congratulations to those two guys, but they didn't do anything. Like Giannis, I'll congratulate. Yeah. But if you're a fan, is it okay? It's almost like the old debate. Can you say we when talking about your team?
Right. You know what? I'm going to say yeah.
Why not? I don't say we with my teams. I don't. I think it's the journalism in me that doesn't do that. I don't say we blew it against the Titans, or I always go them, and I never go we won the Super Bowl. The team it's the team I root for. But
I think I do that with the Dodgers.
People do that, like whenever you win, you say, people go congratulations, as if you had a part to play in the outcome of the thing. But anyway, I don't care if it's good or bad. congratulations, Bill and Matt, two Milwaukee people that are on this network for their Bucks winning the championship.
I know. Good for them. You know, they don't have too many championships.
No.
To celebrate. I mean, they don't.
Have the Brewers ever won the World Series? I don't think so.
No, I think the last one, I guess, for that region, that area, would have been the Packers.
I think the last time the Brewers were in the World Series was 82, the Sud Series with St. Louis.
With Yount.
With Robin Yount and Ben Ogilvy and
Paul Molitor. On that team?
Yeah.
But yeah,
Cecil
Cooper? I think for that region, the last one would have been Aaron Rodgers, Packers.
Packers. Yeah. 11 years ago? 10 years ago?
Yeah, and then just disappointment year after year after year.
That's right. Heartbreak. Oh, I know. Mike Breen last night on the broadcast talking about Frank Kaminsky, and he says, yeah, Wisconsin, let him to a Final Four. I'm like, let him to a championship game.
Yep.
They lost to Duke. Give him the extra game.
But we can't say let him to a championship and just end it there.
No, cannot. You have to end it there. Say championship game. If you make it to the Final Four and you got to the championship game, your resume should include that when people talk about you. Yeah, when people talk about you, they should say, you did the extra step. There were four teams, two of them did something good, and you were one of them. You should be allowed
can't
to
stop
have
just
that
at
part.
Four.
Yeah.
Because if you say it made the Final Four, you're like, oh, okay, you're
okay,
one of the top
that's
four.
Cool. So did VCU at one time. Yeah.
George
Mason did the same exact thing.
Loyola Chicago and Sister Christine.
Right. And yes, but if you make it to the championship where you're actually 40 minutes away from an NCAA title, you have to include that. You have to give them the props for that.
Those other schools we just mentioned, they didn't do that.
Because if my memory corrects me, if correct me if I'm wrong, I think they beat an unbeaten Kentucky team at the time that they
did. And that's something.
I know they beat Kentucky because my brother got tickets to go to that. It was in Indianapolis because he's a Kentucky, and a bank gave him tickets, and he was so excited to see the Wildcats in the championship game, and they did not make it because Wisconsin took them down. Not sure if Kentucky was either unbeaten or one loss at the time, but I know it was a good basketball team that they beat. Frank Kaminsky.